We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome inside the Guilty as Charged podcast. Appreciate you tuning in early on a Saturday. My name is Steven. I am your host, and joining me are my guys, Tyler and Alex. Tyler, we'll start with you, man. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. Just saw Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness last night, and it was great. But the real variant storyline of the week is Steven Kyle Van Noy and all the variant stuff going on there. What's up with that, man? Which Earth are you from?
I think he's from the opposite Earth, man. I think he's the multiversal, you know, traveler that's coming to Earth. Honestly, man, it was like so funny because obviously it's a bit now, like people are just messing with me, you know, but there were like legitimately like four or five people after he signed that were like, this guy looks just like you, Steven. I'm like, what the hell? Like, California's half black, man.
Yeah, the Will Hoyt one was kind of like, okay, they have beards and, you know, they're bigger guy, like, maybe, but Kyle Van Noy really does look like you, though. It was a surprise for sure.
Yeah, I had never like looked up a picture of Kyle Van Noy, but I saw it and I'm like, oh my god, like the nose, the beard, like it just the facial. And he also kind of has that thing where like his head sort of like goes inward, like it was just kind of
my head goes inward.
A little bit, like kind of the shape up was pretty similar. I don't know, but you definitely do look a little like Kyle Van Noy. And so, yeah, I'm Hunter Henry, Tyler's Young Wei Koo. So, yeah, we all have our lookalikes.
Yeah, I had a lot of options to choose from.
Yeah, you did. So
either Koo or Mekhi Becton's. It was one of those two.
Hey, Kyler Murray's got a little Asian in him, supposedly.
He does. Yeah, actually, Kyle Hamilton. I think I'm Kyle Hamilton now.
There you go.
Wait, Mekhi Becton's agent?
No, I'm joking. I'm totally joking.
I thought there was a chance like he was one of those 5%ers and you just said it. I don't know, but
no.
Tyler just chooses to this 6'8" massive human being. I respect it. So obviously we're doing our usual Sunday show live on Saturday because of Mother's Day. So I want to do wish all the moms out there happy Mother's Day, and you know, make sure you guys celebrate your mothers as much as they deserve. So that being said, we have a good show obviously planned for you guys today. We're going to talk about my evil twin signing, if you will, Kyle Van Noy, and the Chargers' decision to bring him in. And then we'll also analyze kind of where the depth chart is at after the draft, after these last two signings. You know, we're going to have some predictions and things like that. So we're going to get a lot of post-draft analysis. Looks like Tyler has some Kyle Van Noy clips ready to go. So we'll get into that. Alex, we'll start with you, man. Your initial reaction to the Chargers' decision to sign Kyle Van Noy.
Yeah, I mean, it made a lot of sense. He was one of those players that was, I'm kind of like, oh, he's still available? Like, I sort of thought just in my head, like, oh, he's going back to the Patriots or something along those lines. But he was available, and Chargers took him, much like when Bryce Callahan was available. I was like, oh, okay, there's the best slot corner in the league who just happens to be available. So for me, I thought it was a really great signing. I, you know, even though I know the Chargers do believe in Chris Rumpf, it's kind of like Tyler said, I just don't think you could go into the season with him as your edge three with the, you know, injury problems that both Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa have had in the past, and sort of relying on him despite kind of like not knowing what he is yet. You know, I think this takes the pressure off of him. Obviously, he'll still play some reps this season, but it gives him a little bit more time to develop. And then, you know, if Kyle Van Noy does depart next year, then the hope would be by then, I think that Chris Rump could take over edge three. And I think that's a little bit more realistic given a development timeline. But I think it's a really fantastic signing. And we've also talked about, particularly last season, you know, Joey Bosa or, you know, Uchenna Nwosu, right, when he was on the team, dropping into coverage. And it was sort of like they're kind of not really equipped to do that, right? Like, obviously they do it on some snaps, but Kyle Van Noy is a guy who can either rush the passer, drop into coverage, do whatever you want him to do, right? And I think he's a very versatile defender in the way that Staley wants. And it makes you feel, even though he's going to primarily be playing edge, let's say 75-80% of the snaps, it makes you feel a little bit better about the linebacker room as well. Just because, you know, if something were to happen to Kenneth Murray, if someone does go in get injured, you have the option to kind of play Kyle Van Noy there as well and relieve some of the pressure off of that unit with the, obviously, the departure of Kaiser White. So for me, the fact that he's kind of the perfect Swiss Army knife for the Brandon Staley defense, the fact that he can play effectively at two levels, really, I think that that's really all you wanted out of an edge three signing. I thought they would go for someone that was a little bit more one dimensional, right? Like JPP was brought up, maybe bring Melvin Ingram back. But this is a guy that I think is going to be primarily edge for this team, but can do so many more things than that. And I think he's the perfect edge three, edge two and a half, as Tyler put it on Twitter, and can kind of rotate in with Joey Bosa or Khalil Mack when needed, clearly.
Yeah, much as the theme of the offseason where I have no idea this player is available and they take him. And they're always pleasant surprises. Same thing with Spiller, with Salyer, with Callahan, not with Kyle Van Noy. You know, he's a guy that, you know, I think two-thirds of the time, if you're watching, by the way, he's the guy in the white sleeves. So hopefully that helps you because one guy's in red sleeves. I would say he aligns as an edge guy two-thirds, three-fourths of the time, you know, set the edge, contain, whatnot. I wouldn't say he's the strongest against the run by any means, but, you know, there's so much that he does because he's so smart, so versatile, that I think there's a lot to that he can bring to the table, obviously. And this is just, it's a perfect edge three signing. You know, the Chargers to me were at their best. You know, the best rush I've seen from the Chargers, maybe over the last decade, was the first two-ish weeks of the season in 2020, where they had Melvin Ingram, they had Joey Bosa, they had Uchenna Nwosu, and they were just crushing it. They had 33 pressures, just that trio in the first two games. And they needed to get back to something like that. And I really do think that Kyle Van Noy can give them at least something like that. I don't think he'll be as good as an edge three as Uchenna Nwosu was during that span. But I do think he can give them a lot more than Kyle Fackrell, who was, I think, had like half the pass rush productivity as a Kyle Van Noy. So it's, again, it's a smart player, a guy who's, you know, played a lot of AFC games for sure. The Chargers have a full slate of AFC big time games, of course, coming up. So I'm very happy with the signing. They really needed to get this done. And I think it just also just takes, like, this is good for Chris Rumpf too. Sure, as a mentor, but also I think if he were the edge three or edge two and a half, I think there'd just be really unrealistic expectations for him that he probably wouldn't be able to meet, going from 130th in, you know, three different categories to trying to be a legit edge three, edge two and a half. That's asking too much of him, and the fan base would expect too much. And I think if he you know, only got 15, 20. Like, if he had five times as many pressures, that's still only 20. I think the Chargers fans would want even more than that. And I just don't think that's fair to him. So now you have Kyle Van Noy. You can really get Chris Rump to be your edge three in year three, which is, I think, the perfect plan. And just overall, I love the aggressiveness for the Chargers. I think when, you know, the two big after draft moves that they've made before, one of them was Matt Slauson, but that's a post-draft cut. And then Brandon Flowers, another post-draft cut. That just felt like things that fell into their lap. But Kyle Van Noy, Bryce Callahan, it shows you that there was some sort of plan. Now, we didn't know this draft night. I had no idea that that was the plan for the Chargers when they, you know, took a nose tackle, they took a running back, they took, you know, players that weren't edge rusher, weren't corner. But now that we've seen this plan, it's a great change for the Chargers. It's tactical, it's strategic, and dare I say smart. So kudos to the whole organization so far.
Yeah, I mean, we talked on our last episode about how the question mark at edge was just kind of, you know, hanging over the draft class. And, you know, now they have solved that need. So really quickly, Tyler, I don't know if you saw, we got a big super chat sticker from your mom. So shout out to Mama Shun. And then your sister Amanda wants to know who your favorite sister is after sending us another super chat. So.
Okay, so Mom, happy Mother's Day. Love you too. Amanda, my favorite sister is whoever brings me food in the next 45 minutes. No, next hour. If you can find me food in the next hour, it'll be you. If not, it's got to go to somebody else.
Patreon exclusive video, sister power ranking coming soon.
There we go.
Per source.
I'm a big fan of the Kyle Van Noy signing too. You know, all jokes aside of him looking at like me or me looking like him or whatever. I think he really just fits the mold of the offseason. I think Brandon Staley has talked about taking the ball away and getting more turnovers to, you know, give Justin Herbert more opportunities. And that's something Kyle Van Noy was talking about, you know, with Haley Elwood in that on the camera segment he did, and kind of what has made him, you know, so successful over the years. And he actually said something that made me think of Brandon Staley, like directly. He was like, I have always considered myself an offensive player. Like, to me, it's all about getting the ball. It's all about taking the chances and taking risks to, you know, affect the game by getting turnovers. And, you know, I forget the specific stat, but he's got 7 forced fumbles, I believe, over the last couple seasons. And I think now the Chargers just have all these players who specialize in taking the ball away, which I think is a fantastic, you know, model to go after. And then in terms of his output as a pass rusher, obviously, you know, he's mostly served as kind of that hybrid off-ball edge rusher linebacker. In New England the last 2 seasons, he was essentially playing 40% of his snaps off the ball and 40% or 60% on the edge, excuse me. Then you look at Kyler Fackrell, who's kind of, you know, a supporting guy, and then Uchenna Nwosu, who's been a supporting guy and then started this past year. So I'll start with Kyler Fackrell. Over the last 2 seasons with the Giants and the Chargers, he's totaled 31 pressures, 7 sacks, and 6 additional quarterback hits. In that same time frame, and like I mentioned, as a starter, but as kind of that hybrid player, Kyle Van Noy has totaled 60 pressures, 10 sacks, 5 additional quarterback hits. And then Uchenna Nwosu as well, 67 total pressures, 10 sacks, 20 additional quarterback hits. So if you just kind of look at where Kyle Van Noy fits in that regard, I think Uchenna Nwosu is kind of a step ahead of him. But Kyle Van Noy is right there behind him in purely as a pass rusher in terms of, you know, getting after the quarterback and affecting the game that way. So I do expect, you know, about 85-90% of his snaps to come on the edge for this team. I think, you know, disaster would have to strike at the linebacker room for him to have to play a ton back there. But like Alex is saying, it's great that he has that option, right? That versatility is definitely valuable. And, you know, they will ask him to drop into coverage from the edge. But I think overall, you're just getting a more productive edge three than, you know, we've had in the last season, at least with Kyler Fackrell kind of being a dud. But now Kyle Van Noy can come in and be that player. And then I think just from a leadership and a culture standpoint, like, his value cannot be overstated because of the experience that he has with that championship culture. Him and J.C. Jackson and Sebastian Joseph Day and Troy Reader, like all these guys who have, you know, won Super Bowls recently, is just so important to this team. And Brandon Staley talked about that, I believe, after day three, where he was talking about the importance of bringing in players and onboarding players from winning environments and being able to kind of set the standard. And that's something Kyle Van Noy talked about on the Pat McAfee show when he said, you know, you can feel that this team has such a sense of urgency to win a championship now, as soon as you walk in that door in that facility, which I love to hear, you know, somebody like Kyle Van Noy talking about the championship culture that the Chargers are establishing really means a lot to me, because obviously he's been there, done that. You know, he's climbed that hill and he's gotten atop of that hill. And so I think from a culture standpoint, he's a perfect fit. I think from an on the field production standpoint, he's a perfect fit. So I'm really excited to see where this goes, and just the flexibility that it's going to give the Chargers as a pass rush is something I can't wait to see. You know, we can kick Joey Bosa inside, you can kick Khalil Mack inside and just get after people and have, you know, whichever of the other edge rusher on the opposite side. So I'm a big fan of this. Again, I never really thought that this was kind of a possibility because he's traditionally been in the New England systems, but you know, that was another thing. He was like, I was really anxious to get out of the New England systems and prove to people that I still have juice left and I can still affect the game. So overall, I think this is a really smart signing, and I'm very excited to see how it pans out.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how it pans out as well. And then I think this just works really well for both sides. I mean, obviously Kyle Van Noy is 31. You know, he's not young, but if he plays this, you know, really great season in a Brandon Staley system, then he probably sets himself up for, you know, a decent contract next year. I don't think he's going to get the 4-year, $51 million deal from the Dolphins he once got. But I do think he sets himself up to get like a 2-year contract, maybe to be a team's edge too. And in the sense of, you know, what Kyle's talked about with comp picks, right? The Chargers kind of set themselves up to maybe promote Chris Rumpf after this season and then, you know, kind of get a comp pick out of Kyle Van Noy. So I think it's a very smart addition in that sense as well. And then like Steven has said, you know, the Chargers kind of have become like a destination, right? I mean, obviously some of that is Justin Herbert, but it's very clearly also Brandon Staley and the fact that you know, Kyle Van Noy and Bryce Callahan wanted to come here. Obviously, Khalil Mack was traded here, so he didn't have a lot of choice, but was kind of swayed, I would imagine, by, you know, having Brandon Staley in the building, and those two kind of go back as well. So I think in that sense, just the Chargers becoming a destination team where these teams want to go to when usually it was the Patriots or it was the Chiefs, I think is a very notable development as well.
Yeah, he mentioned that he talked to Brandon Staley for an hour on the phone before doing his visit. And then obviously once he got inside the door, he was able to just decide to go ahead and sign. So he also got a little bit of recruiting, looks like, from Sebastian Joseph Day at the NFL Network's broadcasting boot camp, as Sebastian Joseph Day was talking about. So it just is, I mean, not to say that Kyle Van Noy is like this big time star player, right? But the Chargers in the past have just never really been able to attract this kind of really solid veteran player who's not necessarily going to be a star, like I mentioned, but just be a great addition to the depth. And I think it kind of speaks volumes to where Brandon Staley has brought this team.
Yeah, Kyle Van Noy and Bryce Callahan are still good. Sean Merriman's still not exonerated on his one big move, though. I don't think that's
I don't think this qualifies.
Nope, doesn't qualify.
No, I don't think so at all. I just want to address one quick question that a couple of people I'm sure have, but from Bolt Brett. You know, is Kyle Van Noy the starter over Neiman and Eamon Ogbonvamiga? I don't believe that's going to happen. I mean, I guess you never know, but to me, see if I can find a certain play, but he was only a inside linebacker type on third down or like deep in the red zone. We're talking like goal line situations. See if I can find the right one here. But he's typically not going to, like, he didn't really play linebacker for the Patriots, or at least inside linebacker. He just reduced inside. He's not a hand in the dirt, but he would play over the B gap and try to rush from there. But like this play right here, but he's not going to start over any of the inside linebackers they have. It's just an option for them, but I don't think they are. And then just, I guess for what it's worth, you know, Chris Rumpf did this a lot in college, and I didn't see a whole lot from it of him doing this with the Chargers last year. So I don't even know if they're going to use this option at all with Kyle Van Noy, but they certainly can. But no, I don't think he's starting. I mean, if people get hurt, maybe he starts over Neiman and Amen, but he's not going to start for the Chargers.
No, definitely not as an off-ball backer. I think, you know, like Alex was saying, that's just kind of a backup skill set that he has. I think his primary skill set that he's going to bring the Chargers is as a pass rusher. He's listed as an outside linebacker on the Chargers website. And, you know, he mentioned on the Pat McAfee show again that, you know, he was really looking for an opportunity where he could really rush the passer more often. And so I think he had the intention of signing here as an edge rusher, as a pass rusher. And I think the Chargers had the intention of bringing him in to do that. He's going to wear number 8 for the team, which is a little weird for me because he is a pass rusher. I'll still never like kind of get over that. I think single digit numbers on pass rushers, and Gerald Everett wearing number 7 is just weird. But no, I think the starters at linebacker, we'll get into this in the depth chart, right? But I think you can pencil in Drew Tranquil, and then we'll kind of see where Kenneth Murray's health is at. And maybe that's Troy Reader. Maybe that's Eamon Ogbonmamiga, like we had been hearing. Granted, that was before they signed Troy Reader. So we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But Calvin Noy's primary skill set is going to be as a pass rusher for the Chargers.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Matt also asked if they had released the contract numbers yet for either of these two signings. We have not seen them, which is pretty surprising, but at this point, because Bryce Callahan signed on Tuesday, right?
Sure.
And I think so. Yeah, I mean, obviously Kyle Van Noy was Thursday, so, you know, love that Kyle Van Noy decided to sign the day after he recorded, but it's all good. no, but we have not gotten any contract numbers yet. As soon as we do, we'll obviously, you know, let you guys know. I would expect Callahan to be on the minimum contract, just based off of his injury history and things like that. But Kyle Van Noy maybe a little bit more, maybe like a $2 million, $3 million kind of contract. I don't know, but given that he is a pass rusher, I would expect slightly more than the minimum at least.
Yeah, kind of depends on his Patriots contract, because I do believe our Kyle was talking about if he does have some kind of like offset clause or language in his contract, then the Chargers could have potentially gotten him for the minimum. But, you know, we'll learn more about that as it plays out.
Yeah, so the Patriots, I mean, the contract that he was cut from, was he cut?
He was cut, yeah.
By the okay. Yeah, so his contract then was 2 years, $12 million. So I don't think it'll be that much, and I think it'll be for 1 year. But that's just what his old contract was.
Yeah, crazy to think that he signed, was it a four-year deal with the Dolphins?
Yeah. $451 million, mm-hmm, 2020.
Jeez.
What was the guaranteed money on that, though? I don't remember.
Total guarantees was $30
million. Oh, wow. So, damn, they really took it all on that one. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I just did a search on Twitter and can't find anything about a contract there. So somebody said 2.5 plus incentives. That could certainly be the case. I can't find anything on Twitter that verifies what he's at. So, yeah. Jack is asking me how the 1 hour phone call was. Man, listen, I wish I could talk to Brandon Staley for an hour. It'd be fucking awesome.
Follows us on Twitter. That's about it.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you guys want to mention here about Kyle Van Noy?
No, I think we had everything.
All right. Sounds good. So we will get to our depth chart analysis here. We're going to do this in terms of talking about starters, primary backups, roster locks, people we think are going to be practice squads. So we kind of have it sorted here. You know, group by group, as Tyler is sharing the Google sheet that we decided to come up. Obviously, there's not a ton of changes on the offense, at least in terms of the starters. So we'll still have Justin Herbert, obviously, Austin Eckler, Donald Parham kind of listed at. I put a big slot here for Gerald Everett just so I could have a little bit more clarification in terms of roster things. I didn't want to create another specific category up top for the tight end. So I put big slot for Gerald Everett and then Stone Smart, kind of the practice squad guy, just so you guys can see that. And then Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, Jalen Guyton, Rashawn Slater, Matt Filer, Corey Lindsley, Zion Johnson, Trey Pipkins is kind of the starting group. So where do you guys want to start here with the offense?
I think running back.
Do we need a whole Brandon Peters debate? I don't think we do. So I think we could start at running back.
I think it's possible. Isn't Brandon Peters like a pretty big quarterback? Like, I know they try to kick the tires on the Mississippi KJ State Costello. Quarterback.
I thought KJ Costello was like kind of good in college though, versus I always thought Brandon Peters was bad as someone who's watched a lot of Big Ten football. But maybe he pushes Easton Stick in the preseason. I just wonder if they're comfortable with Easton Stick as clipboard guy now, and just kind of want to keep him there. But he is entering the last year of his deal, so if they really think he's a guy that can push him, it's possible. I just don't. Yeah, I think he's probably a practice squad player.
Yeah.
Brandon Peters is definitely a practice squad player. I would be shocked otherwise. I have on here roster bubble category and then roster bubble 2 category for those who are watching. Again, if you're listening, we'll try and kind of explain things as best as we can here. But I think that it's distinction I was trying to have here with the roster bubble and roster bubble 2 thing is that roster bubble, like you have a chance of making it. Roster bubble 2 is kind of you're on the outside looking in, most likely kind of shifting over to that practice squad category. So the Easton Stick thing is going to be interesting, man, because obviously there were so many people last preseason that were talking about how he should have been QB2 over Chase Daniel. I still think it's going to be Daniel, man. I'd be pretty surprised if they cut Daniel coming out of training camp. He's so comfortable in the system. He has got a great relationship with Joe Lombardi and Justin Herbert. The question really is, are they going to be able to cut Easton Stick this year and free up that other roster spot, which, you know, obviously the COVID restrictions are kind of lifted. We don't really have to worry about that anymore. So I would very much like to have that other roster spot. I just don't know if they'll actually end up cutting Easton Stick.
Yeah, it's a toss up for me because they kept him last year. I'm going to assume that he sticks and they keep 3, even though I think that's an awful set of roster management. But I guess if you're keeping one more of anything, quarterback is something. I don't know. Like, what do you expect from Easton Stick at this point? Like, you stick him on the roster, he leaves, and like, he doesn't get you a comp pick. He's not going to sign elsewhere. He's not, you know, is he traded? You know, like, that's the best value for him at this point, is trading him somewhere, but no one's going to trade for him. So it's a roster spot waste, but I think they're going to carry 3 based on what they did last year and just find other position groups to cut down on.
Yeah, I think they end up keeping 3, whether that's Easton Stick or it's Brandon Peters. I think it makes sense for them to go 2 because we know Chase Daniel's QB2 and it's not particularly close. I don't think Easton Stick will push him for that. I think Daniel pretty much has that spot locked down at this point. So I would rather they keep 2, but I think based on what they did last year, based on how they like Stick, I think he just sticks around. Me and Tyler
really need a new roster phrasing there with Easton Stick and sticks around. It's all good. All right, so we'll move on to the running backs here. Obviously, Austin Ekeler as the starter. Isaiah Spiller, I think, pretty clearly RB2 at this point. The question obviously is going to be Larry Roundtree versus Joshua Kelly, maybe Letty Brown, Kevin Marks, kind of, you know, get their foot in the door that way. Tyler, what do you make of the running back room? I know you watched a little bit of Letty Brown, and I know Alex has watched a little bit of Kevin Marks. So we'll start with Tyler, man. What do you make of the RB3 spot?
I do think it comes down to one of the two players that they have drafted. You know, Larry Roundtree being drafted more recently seems like it would be an edge for them, but I feel like Joshua Kelly, Larry Roundtree is kind of not useless. That's mean. But like, okay, Joshua Kelly presents a different skill set than I think Larry Roundtree, I think, at least as a sort of receiving-ish back. I'm really clutching at straws here. I think Kelly,
he's a better athlete.
He's a better athlete. Sure. And that's the skill that I do think sticks out. Like Roundtree and Spiller, I'm not saying they're redundant because I like Spiller a lot more than Roundtree, but you know, I think Kelly is something a little bit different. But then again, you know, they wanted to work with Roundtree early last year, and then it was Kelly, then it was Roundtree. I forget how it finished. I know everyone's talking about Letty Brown. To me, I don't think he's anything more than a practice squad guy, early on at least. I mean, listen, the preseason is a great way for Chargers running backs to find a spot on the roster. That's just always how it's been with Tom Telesco, whether you talk about Brandon Oliver or obviously Austin Eckler. And if you show out in the preseason, there's a good shot. But, you know, with the investment in Eckler, with Spiller, you know, and then one of these two drafted players, I just don't think Letty Brown makes it. Also because, kind of like Roundtree, it just feels a bit redundant as well. You know, if he's going to make it, it's going to be based off of his role as a nice change of pace guy. I think he was top 15 in missed tackles in this draft class, so not bad there. But I mean, the thing that people aren't really talking about because they just watched the tube highlights, he was, you know, like a 95.5 pass blocking efficiency. He's not good in pass protection. You could use him as a receiving back, so there's some work there. But he's also got 5 fumbles this past season, which is not good. So he has to show that he's more than a liability, which sounds mean, but there wasn't a whole lot to see on film outside of that 3-4 yards in a cloud of dust with an occasional highlight play and some forced missed tackles, you know, because the 5 fumbles, the bad pass blocking efficiency, that's very cuttable. Like if you make that mistake once in the preseason, you're cut, you're gone. You can't give up that sack. I think he allowed 2. You can't have 5 forced, you know, fumbles allowed. So I think the RB3, I do think they keep 3 running backs. I don't think it's 4. And I think it should come down to Joshua Kelly just because he's a little bit more dynamic than Larry Roundtree. That one's a coin toss for me.
So I actually kind of think we have Austin Eckler as RB1, Isaiah Spiller clearly RB2. I think they would lean Larry Roundtree over Joshua Kelly, just because I think you look at special teams value. Joshua Kelly does not have any special teams value, as we've seen over and over again. I do think they value having that in an RB3. And I think if you're talking about who's a little bit more similar to the mold of Isaiah Spiller, it's probably Larry Roundtree, despite, you know, his athleticism not being great. So I think they kind of lean Roundtree more there. The other thing to consider there is, of course, one was drafted by Anthony Lynn, one was drafted by Brandon Staley. Like, I do think that that kind of matters. So even though it should kind of be a meritocracy, I don't think it is, in a sense. So I kind of would slot in Larry Roundtree as the RB3. That probably, well, depends if they carry 3 or 4 running backs. I mean, obviously they carried 4 last year. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that they couldn't really rely on Justin Jackson to be their RB2 because of the obvious health concerns. So they sort of felt the need to keep them both. And so obviously when Justin Jackson was healthy, either Roundtree or Kelly was a healthy scratch. So they probably carry 3 this year, and I would guess it's Eckler, Spiller, Roundtree. And then I would guess a practice squad spot comes down to Joshua Kelly, Letty Brown, or Kevin Marks. I kind of agree with Tyler in that I think Letty Brown is a little bit redundant for, you know, what they already have in Isaiah Spiller and Larry Roundtree if we're kind of penciling them onto the roster. I think Kevin Marks, a lot of people have compared him to some of the shorter running backs that have come out of Buffalo in Brandon Oliver and who else? Jarrett Patterson. Yeah. But I actually don't think he's really like them. He's like 6 feet tall. So, I mean, to me, just from watching him a little bit, Kevin Marks is a little bit of that Justin Jackson kind of player. He's a little bit shifty, has the right height. And I think they actually ran like identical 40 times at their pro day as well, both 4.51s. So for me, I would kind of take Kevin Marks over Letty Brown. Obviously, we're debating either a running back 4 spot or practice squad spot. But yeah, I think if they keep 4 running backs, it'll be Eckler, Spiller, Roundtree, and then one of those 3 guys, basically toss it up to how it happens in the preseason between Kelly, Brown, and Marks. And then if they end up keeping 3, then I think those 3 guys are fighting for a practice squad.
Yeah, for what it's worth, Larry Roundtree was inactive from week 12 on last season. So they did close the season with Kelly ahead of him.
That's true.
Yeah, I would like to have a different profile, right? I think Isaiah Spiller, Larry Roundtree, Letty Brown, they're all kind of similar physically, at least profiles. So I would like to see them do Eckler, Spiller, and then either Kelly or Marks, just from an athletic profile standpoint. The draft capital thing is interesting. I mean, the fact that they still kept Kelly active after that fumble against the Chiefs is really interesting. There's just like so many moving parts here.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Kevin Marks ends up kind of earning that spot like we've seen, you know, in the preseason. So I would like to see them. I would like to see it be Kelly or Marks, but I do think Roundtree kind of slightly considered the favorite, I guess, just because of recent draft capital. Moving on to fullback here really quickly. I think it's Horvath. I don't think Neighbors really has a chance of making this roster this year. If Horvath were just an undrafted free agent, I would maybe see a stronger path for Gabe Neighbors. But, I mean, they drafted Horvath. Like, they went out of their way to select him, make sure that they got their guy, so to speak. And I think he just gives them more upside as a runner, as a receiving back option as well. And the man is built like an absolute tank. So I'm excited to see him kind of take on those blocking reps and grow into that role. So I'd be pretty surprised if it were not Horvath. I know I put Neighbors here as the primary backup, but I honestly, just kind of talking myself right now, I kind of want to move him over here to roster bubble two. I don't know about you guys if you want to leave him there or backup, but I'd be pretty surprised if Gabe Neighbors made the roster over Xander Horvath at this point.
I mean, yeah, they're not going to carry two fullbacks. Like, that's right. The reality. They're only going to carry one, and I would lean towards Xander Horvath because they made that pick. If he was an undrafted free agent, like Steven said, I think there would be a little room for, you know, consideration there, and the margins would be slimmer, and you could just say, oh, well, Neighbors had a great preseason game, or Horvath did, and then that person would win. But I think the capital that they invested, granted, it was a seventh round pick, so it's not like they took him in like the fifth or sixth round or something, but still, for a fullback, I think to spend that does say how confident they are that he can pretty much lock down that roster spot. And then I'm curious to see if they do go Horvath at fullback, how that actually affects both. I mean, the tight end room is kind of set in stone, but how that affects the running back room as well, because we know Horvath can kind of do a little bit of running back, fullback, and tight end, right? He is a little versatile in that way. So does having him kind of maybe make a difference in which one you keep between Roundtree and Kelly? Does it make a difference, you know, if you're kind of going down the list between Marks and Brown, which one you would want to keep, just if you're trying to like complement it a little bit? So I'm curious to see if that ends up kind of affecting the running back room as well.
Yeah, obviously when they drafted Horvath, he was listed as a fullback. So I think that this, you know, where they're going to have him. But I am curious how everything shakes out with how they feel, you know, is McKitty just an inline tight end to them? Is he an H-back to them? Are they using an H-back? Is that Xander Horvath? Is Xander Horvath just a fullback? Is he just a weapon? Or are they converting him to tight end? Like, what are they doing with this group? It's definitely going to be an interesting group. But yeah, I think Neighbors at this point has been shown the door. Now they have the capital investment in somebody else, and Neighbors was inactive for quite a bit of last season.
It was like basically the last 13 games.
Yeah. I mean, they tried to get Neighbors going early on in training camp, and then Steven Anderson, just from day one, did not let that job go. And, you know, they had no choice but to start Steven Anderson, which is great. But, you know, I just don't think Neighbors sticks around. If he wasn't best friends with Justin Herbert, we wouldn't even be talking about this. That will stick in my mind. If he sticks on the roster, then we know exactly what kind of power Justin Herbert might have. But no, it seems harsh to put him on roster bubble two, but it's so either or, where it's like you're either Xander Horvath starting or you're just not on the roster, because they wouldn't keep two fullbacks. And I think at this point, you know, kind of blending in with the tight ends, you know, they knew Jared Cook was going to be on his way out or older. They knew Steven Anderson was probably on his way out, or they wanted to go somewhere else. So I felt like they carried a little bit more weight in the tight end fullback room because of that. But now with Cook gone, you know, you have your investment in a young McKitty, you have your 2-year investment in Everett, you just drafted Horvath. You know, I think they can get rid of at least Neighbors and then one extra tight end.
Yeah, I think with the tight end room, we'll kind of move on there. Like, I think the roles are very clearly defined. You know, Donald Parham, kind of your inline receiving, possible slot flex, Gerald Everett, your big slot, possible inline flex, and then Trey McKitty, kind of your blocking tight end, H-back. And so I'm really excited to see his development. I hope he gets more involved as a pass catcher. Obviously, you've got that group over there of undrafted free agents. Obviously, Hunter Campmeyer has a year on the roster at this point. Eric, I think it's pronounced Cromanhook, if I'm not mistaken, from USC. And then Stone Smart, have not watched any Old Dominion tape at this point. You know, I
shame on you.
Even we'll see if I can even track some down, man. But apparently, he's more of kind of that big slot receiver type as well. So I put him as the practice squad version of Gerald Everett. So I think they lean towards keeping just the three and then the one fullback in Xander Horvat this year. Just like you said, now we know that McKitty can do more. Obviously, Parham taking another leap forward. And then, you know, Gerald Everett is a much better blocker than Jared Cook. So I know Brandon Staley loves his tight ends. I know Joe Brady, former Panthers offensive coordinator, has said tight end is the most important position in the Saints offense. But I just don't think we have that fourth tight end option this year.
Yeah, I would agree there. I'm curious who they designate as what. Because again, if McKitty's only an inline tight end to them and they actually don't have an H-back because Xander Horvath is just Gabe Neighbors as that fullback, then I could see a chance where Kentmore or Cromin Huck make it. But no, I think they keep the three. And I think they should keep the three. So Stone Smart's more of the receiving guy?
That's what I've heard from other people, yeah. Again, have not watched anything. That's just kind of what I've heard and seen on Twitter.
That's definitely a – I mean, I haven't watched him at all. Again, Old Dominion film ain't available all that much. But that is a sneaky shot to make the roster. Again, I'll have to watch him. But, you know, Cromin Huck has, like, six receptions and – or, you know, I think he had, like, 16 receptions. So I'm smart. He's more of a receiving guy. You know, Everett's obviously a receiving guy. Parham, receiving guy. But then McKitty is just kind of – at least in terms of last year, was just a pure blocker. So there's a chance – I guess another receiving tight end like Stone Smart, if he's the only guy they have in that bubble, I think there's a chance he makes it. But again, I still think it is the three.
Yeah, I think it's the three. And then Xander Horvath is your, you know, fullback tight end kind of guy as well. If Steven Anderson was still on this roster and he didn't sign with the Cardinals, like that might be a situation where you keep four and then keep the fullback. But like, I just don't think they think Hunter Camp Moyer is going to lock down a roster spot this year.
Sure.
I don't know a whole lot about Eric Cromin Huck or Stone Smart yet, but I don't think they view them as threats to make the roster either. I think all those guys are kind of competing for the tight end practice squad spot, and that can be decided in the preseason, you know, depending on who has some of the better games. But yeah, no, I think it's pretty clearly Gerald Everett, Donald Parham, Trey McKitty, and Xander Horvath in some order.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jack in the chat says he knows a guy who knows a guy with Old Dominion film. Well, if you do, please send
them. Are we better call Solid for Old Dominion film right now?
Because they have two Old Dominion guys, man. Like, we got to get some Old Dominion film at some point. So, yeah. All right, we'll move on to receivers. This is kind of, you know, one of the reasons why I'm hopeful that they keep two quarterbacks and three tight ends as opposed to last year, is so they could potentially keep six receivers this year as opposed to just five, where your fifth is useless, essentially. So obviously we know who the starting group is, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, Jalen Guyton, and then Josh Palmer is a lock as well. And I think DeAndre Carter is in that same group as a return specialist, gadget kind of player for this team. Then the question becomes, if they keep six, who is that sixth player? Right now, obviously Jason Moore is kind of the most similar body type to Mike Williams, so I have him penciled in there as the backup. Obviously, there's the Joe Reed stuff. Maurice French showed some interesting things, I guess, as a returner against Houston. So maybe he carves a role out. He's obviously has a good relationship with Chris Beatty, the receivers coach. And then you have kind of the undrafted, the two undrafted guys, Michael Bandy and Trayvon Bradford. So, Alex, we'll start with you on this one. Who do you see kind of being that sixth guy, and do you think they actually keep six this year?
If there is a sixth guy, I think it's probably between Moore, Reed, or Bandy, just because we saw a little bit of Bandy playing special teams last year. So maybe there's some value there. Maybe he has a couple good preseason games. I don't think you – I mean, Bradford has some speed, but I don't think they really view him as a threat to make the roster. But I will say, if they do keep five, I'm not quite as worried about it as I was last year, because you kind of had KJ Hill, who was the fifth wide receiver they kept last year for special teams slash wide receiver value. And he was not good at special teams versus DeAndre Carter. Very clearly, that's his strength, and that's why they brought him in. So if you keep five receivers this year, I actually don't think it's as bad as when they did it last year. So obviously, for health reasons, you could keep Jason Moore or Joe Reed. But I would guess, based on the guys that they have right now, it's probably five, and then you stick two of them on the practice squad between that group. So I'm fine with that this year, considering it's DeAndre Carter over KJ Hill in terms of special teams value. And I think DeAndre Carter can provide that wide receiver value much better than KJ Hill could as well.
Yeah, I sure hope so. Watching that game with Steven, the final game of the year against the Raiders, and these guys are gassed, and they couldn't do anything with Andre Roberts. I don't even know if he had a target that game.
No, he was running routes out there, and just like there was no interest from the defense. Just his way. It was sad. It was sad.
Yeah. So at least Carter, like, that does help with some of that. Again, I don't think the Chargers are going to have, you know, 72 passing reps or whatever it is in a game where guys are gassed, but it would be nice to have someone out there who can do a little bit more. So Carter's great. Yeah. The year is 2047, and I'm still convincing myself that Jason Moore should make the team as wide receiver six or seven. I just find this, especially now with, you know, only three tight ends and I guess one fullback, I find it so odd that they're going to go, I mean, it seems like they're going to go with five wide receivers. And I mean, I guess now that you have Spiller, you know, Eckler can be more of a receiver, and Spiller can kind of catch passes, and Horvath can catch passes. So
sure,
I suppose a receiving group, it's okay. But the wide receiver room just seems so, keeping five just doesn't really make sense to me, and no investment in anybody else. Like, it is Jason Moore. Like, I think by default it almost has to be Jason Moore. I think Carter rules out Reed. I think Carter, you know, if he's also the returner, rules out, you know, French or Bandy or whatever. So I think if there's a sixth guy, I think it's Moore, just because he's actually a receiver that I've seen do pretty well in the preseason.
Sure.
But I think they go five here. I mean, they invested nothing in this position group. After Carter, obviously, but nothing, you know, as a receiver in the draft, in free agency. So I think they keep five. I think they're cool with that.
Yeah, I think they are as well. I would love for, you know, Jason Moore to be a thing. You know, we've seen him do so well in training camp and preseason for like 4 years running at this point, 5 years running. And, you know, listen, like, he is, again, like the most similar body type to Mike Williams. And there certainly was a good connection with Moore and Chase Daniel, so to speak. I think French would give them, you know, a little bit more speed profile kind of vertically. So I would say it would be Moore or French, just based off of kind of what we know as them as receivers. I would love for Joe Reed to make the roster, man, at this point. You know, I put him on the first roster bubble spot here, but really I think he's in that second one, and then we can kind of move Jason Moore over there as well. But so I would say Moore or French would be more likely to make the roster at this point, just because of what they can give you vertically is just more refined than a guy like Joe Reed, who just is a little too similar to the three kind of slot receivers they have in Keenan Allen, DeAndre Carter, and Josh Palmer.
I think we also look at like right tackle probably next. That's like where another free agent signing could come if the Chargers aren't done after Kyle Van Noy and Bryce Callahan. But I do think that, you know, if you kind of get another wide receiver in there, you know, a lot of people have brought up Will Fuller. I don't think that's going to happen, but you could probably get some kind of wide receiver who wants to, you know, compete for like that fourth or fifth spot. Because right now I'm just looking at the names and it doesn't seem particularly inspiring for why they would pick a six receiver, even if it kind of does make sense. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's like a post-draft 1 year vet minimum deal that you kind of like give to a guy. So that'll be interesting to see if they do that. But I, you know, I know why we would want to keep six receivers and I kind of still do, but I feel much better about keeping five receivers in this current format than what they started with last year.
For sure.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really curious what Ficken does with this group because he's kind of in charge of this back end of the roster bubble sort of group when it comes to running backs and wide receivers, partially for offense, but also obviously for special teams. And, you know, who knows who surprises him? You know, Joe Reed basically was not given the chance to be a returner at all at the beginning of camp last year.
Yeah.
And maybe this year that completely changes. Maybe Ficken goes, hey, you know, this guy could be really good at this. Let's give him a shot. And then who knows what happens from there. So, you know, I'm really curious to see what he does with running back, what he does with wide receiver, because he will have a big input on the back end.
Yeah, and to that point, kind of, you know, leading into the offensive line discussion, Frank Blakely with the super chat, he says, I think the draft showed that they feel the protection and more play action will lead to more deep balls. Would love another speed guy, but it looks like he kind of tailed off there. But strong offensive line, I'm guessing, is kind of where he's going there. And that kind of backs up what we've said for the last couple of weeks, right? You know, that we heard, or Arjun heard rather, that Chargers people were telling league sources that they viewed the problem in terms of the deep ball production as an offensive line issue and not as a receiving issue. Brandon Staley has said a few times that he really likes this receiver group for them, which kind of points to why they didn't add anybody else too. So if the offensive line is better, that has, you know, some great ramifications for the receiving group, gives you more time to kind of develop those deep routes. So I think that is a good point to stand on as we lead into our offensive line discussion here.
Yeah, no, that's a great call for sure. Watching some of the early stuff the Chargers did, you know, Jalen Guyton's down the sideline going, hello, you know, wide open. And granted, I don't think he's the most dynamic deep threat, but, you know, someone is, you know, again, I hope they can fix right tackle. Someone's beating up Storm Norton against the Ravens, and someone's beating up Storm Norton when they're playing the Patriots. And Guyton's down there. You know, there's an option for Herbert who can play it, put it anywhere on the field, and he just can't get there because someone is attacking him. So hopefully, you know, with better protection, with Herbert being more comfortable, you know, if we had Jason on to break down that Denver game, and Keenan Allen's wide open in the middle of the field, you know, two, three times that game, and Herbert's just not seeing him. So hopefully, another year in the system, more comfortable. And obviously, you know, third year in the NFL, what did Staley say? The inventory of experiences. Hopefully that really sticks with Herbert. And I think it will. Like, dude's pretty smart. And hopefully they can attack more just with better protection, more familiarity, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if we're going for like this offensive line discussion, this completely hinges on whether they bring in another right tackle. Because if you bring in like a Dennis Kelly or somebody like that, then I think that probably knocks Storm Norton off the roster. I mean, we could kind of debate whether we would do that or not. Obviously, they have some practice squad guys that they like Foster Sarrell. Maybe he could compete for something in the preseason, but I think he's likely just probably staying a practice squad guy. But yeah, it really hinges on that. How many offensive linemen did they keep total last year? Was it nine?
Nine, yeah. So they'll keep nine again.
Yeah.
You know, two backup tackles, essentially, and two backup interior offensive linemen.
Yeah, I think that they end up keeping two backups. So, I mean, you're probably looking at if Will Clapp being kind of your backup center / backup interior offensive lineman. Obviously, they're going to keep Jaimes there. And then maybe if they do sign a right tackle, you're probably looking at like Sally or Pipkins as like the right tackle backups if they want to phase Storm Norton out. Obviously, that's kind of like projecting, you know, based on what they do. But I really do think they end up going for a right tackle option. So if they do, I think that's kind of the configuration. If we're just talking about these guys, then Storm Norton probably makes the roster as like the, you know, backup tackle at this point. So yeah, I'm very curious to see what their actual confidence interval in Trey Pipkins is.
Yeah, you know, right now, I think you look at this group and there's just an excess of interior offensive linemen, right? You can only keep five interior offensive linemen, your three starters, your two backups. So you have Filer, Lindsey, Zion, and then you have Brendan Jaimes, Will Clapp, and Jamari Sawyer. That's really good depth. I feel fantastic about that depth, but you know, you only have really three offensive tackles to kind of head into training camp with. I mean, I know you have the Andrew Traynor and Foster Serrell, the undrafted free agent types, but they never really replaced Brian Bulaga. And so I know everybody kind of thinks that I'm just kind of, you know, blowing smoke up my ass when I'm talking about Matt Filer potentially kicking out to right tackle. But you know, I think it's a legitimate option because they didn't replace Brian Bulaga. You know, they've prioritized low pressure numbers and high pass blocking efficiency rating at every single turn on the offensive line. So I just don't understand how you can head into training camp with this group of tackles, man. It doesn't make any sense to me that a team that has consistently prioritized, you know, those kind of attributes in production is going to head into it and just say, hey, you know what, we're just going to run it back with Trey Pipkins or Storm Norton again. Like, that just doesn't, I can't wrap my head around that. And, you know, a lot of people have said, well, Pipkins has improved, like he's working with Duke and, you know, he's going to take another step forward. And like, that's great. I hope that's true, but it's a very similar conversation to Chris Rumpf. It's not a smart bet to make. And so I think if your goal is to get the best five players out there, which it kind of seems like they're taking that approach, then you have to kick Matt Filer to right tackle. You do not have a better option at right tackle on the roster than Matt Filer. So I don't know, man. Like, I'm really struggling to come up with a better alternative than kicking Matt Filer to right tackle and rolling with Zion Johnson and Jamari Salyer as my two guards. Unless they sign a Dennis Kelly or Derry Williams, like that's my group. I'm not starting Trey Pipkins or Storm Norton.
Yeah, everything really changed with that Salyer pick because, you know, Zion Johnson plays guard, and if Filer's your left guard and Zion Johnson's your right guard, okay. But then you get Salyer, who, as long as the medicals check out, which, again, that is something we don't really know much about, that changes a lot. Like, this is a guy you would have taken, you know, if he was in last year's draft, you would have taken him well ahead of Hymus. Well, if, again, barring the medical stuff, and he would have been a second, third round pick, and he probably would be competing and potentially starting for your team. Yeah. It changed everything. So it really just comes down to whether they took him because they thought he could change the dynamic of their line or because he was just best player available. And maybe it is both, but if they only took him because he was best player available and then eventually we'll figure it out and he'll just be, you know, Will Clapp's replacement or a really good backup guy, then nothing's changing. But if they took him because they went, wait, this is a guy who can at least play, you know, one of the guard spots, and maybe it's rough to start, but he could legit ball. Like, Staley's all about matchups and, you know, watching college matchups and seeing who you go against. And again, Salyer allowed six pressures, I think, as a left tackle against, you know, in all of the college football last season. Granted, he didn't play the whole season, but it was what, one pressure against Michigan, and I think another pressure against, I think he went Alabama, Michigan, and gave up like four pressures.
Yeah, because Will Anderson, meetings. Aiden Hutchinson, and David Ojabo.
Yeah, I mean, he went through the gauntlet and survived. And while I do think he is best suited as a guard, you can't help but watch that and go, geez, maybe he could do it. But to me, I do think it comes down to Filer staying and them either having competition between Pipkins and Salyer for right tackle or bringing in a right tackle to start over Pipkins. At this point, I don't think Filer's moving. They're pretty adamant about that. And, you know, again, I would like Filer to play right tackle, but I guess there's a world where if Filer moves to right tackle and he's not as good as you think he is, and then Salyer's playing one of your guard spots and he struggles, now you have two problems. Now, that's potentially two problems versus one guaranteed problem, which is right tackle, but the Chargers might not want to go with the mystery box and just go with the sure thing instead. It's like, okay, we have four spots locked down, guaranteed, good to go, and we'll help out the tackle versus the mystery box of, well, Filer can play right tackle. Well, he might struggle, but let's put Salyer out there. Oh, he might struggle. I think the Chargers might want to stick with, you know, what they know. And again, I really hope it's a right tackle veteran that comes in next.
Yeah, I mean, since the beginning, I mean, even when people like Popper were bringing up Filer for right tackle in March, I always kind of sold the possibility just because it didn't seem like they were going in that direction. Then you see what they do in the draft, and it's like, Filer to right tackle makes a lot of sense. I mean, it certainly solves the right tackle problem. Even though there's a risk that he underperforms, I don't think we would expect Filer to underperform to the extent that, you know, what Trey Pipkins and Storm Norton underperforming is. You know, he has played very quality snaps at right tackle before. So for me, I don't think there's as much risk associated there as like a mystery box situation. So I think you kind of can move Filer there. It really comes down to organizationally, is that what they want to do? But just looking at this offensive line, you kind of like would promote Trey Pipkins, or you would probably have Trey Pipkins and Storm Norton as backups then, which is fine if Filer moves to right tackle, and then you can kind of promote Jaimes or Salier to that guard spot that's vacated by Filer, right? So I think that that makes a lot of sense on paper, but like Tyler said, they might just want to go, hey, we have four spots locked down and we'll figure out tackle later, which has kind of been how they've addressed the offseason so far. But yeah, this is where I think one of two things needs to happen. Either they need to sign a right tackle and you know, go into training camp with that expectation that that player is going to play right tackle, or they probably have to convert Filer. So I think those, that's one of the two options. I, like Steven said, like we've been talking about, yeah, you can go in with Trey Pipkins as your right tackle and it'll probably be okay, you know, if you have those four guys near him. But if bodies start dropping on that offensive line, then that Trey Pipkins, you know, you're not able to help Trey Pipkins anymore to the extent. So I just don't think it optimally works that way. But yeah, we'll see whether confidence interval in Trey Pipkins is one way or another.
Yeah, man, I just think it's like Brandon Staley was talking about, you can help tackles easier than you can help guards. That's why they kind of emphasize the guard position. And I totally understand that.
Right.
But it's like, my guy, you're going against Chandler Jones and Max Crosby on, you know, twice a year. And you've got all these good pass rushers and in the AFC that you're going to go up against. And every team has two quality pass rushers at least on the edge. And so I don't know. I just am hoping that there is still another right tackle, at least a Dennis Kelly type, to like at the bare minimum bring in some competition. So
yeah. And I mean, I do think the door on this possibility has closed slightly because of the draft and taking Zion Johnson and taking Jamari Salier. But, you know, I wouldn't count Ode Bushi completely out of the picture, right? Like if they wanted to, you know, kick Matt Filer out, and then you can kind of put, you can put Ibushi there pretty confidently, a left guard, based on what he did last year. I don't think that that's what they'll end up doing, but I don't think the door is completely closed on that possibility. So, you know, that's something to consider as well.
I don't think the door is shut on a future return. I just don't think it's going to be part of their the season plans. Not. And he kind of tweeted like, you know, all love, you know, good for the kid. Yeah. His spot's pretty much taken.
Yeah. So, yeah, they'll keep 9. We can pencil in a 9 there, and then we'll just kind of have to see how that pans out. So we spent a lot of time on the offense. let's shift to the defense now, and we'll kind of try and go a little bit faster with this group, and then probably save special teams for another time. all right, so in terms of the edge rushers, like we talked about, Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, Kyle Van Noy, Chris Rumpf, all considered locks at this point. Any chance either of you think that they keep 5 with maybe M.A.K. Egbe or Jamal Davis or Ty Shelby? any chance you guys think they keep 5, really roll with 4 again like they did last year?
I think they roll with 4. That seems to be the Brandon Staley just way of doing things at this point. And I think he just kind of use it as well. If Bosa or Mac go down, we're kind of fucked anyway. Like, I don't think they're going to really keep a 5th one just for that purpose. I think you look at Jamal Davis, who they obviously brought in from the CFL, is like a guy that maybe they're impressed with and he can get a practice squad spot. M.A.K. Egbele, I mean, obviously has been in the system for a while, so that's a possibility too. But yeah, I think that you're pretty much looking at those guys and
nice, Tyler.
roster bubble 4.
Dead to me.
yeah, but I think you're pretty much looking at those 4 guys, and then, you know, between the 3-4 edges that you have the rest on the roster, one of those guys is a practice squad guy to promote.
Yeah, no, and I think that's probably Jamal Davis, considering just how much Tom Telesco's kind of talked about him this year. So
that's like what we talked about with the running backs, with Lenny Brown and Marks and Kelly. Like, the margins are so slim that that could be decided by one preseason game, you know. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about the interior guys next. I think we can safely consider Jerry Tillery, Sebastian Joseph Day, Austin Johnson as locks. That group is starting. And then Otito Ogbonia, I think, is a lock, and Christian Covington as well. just because Brandon Staley really likes that veteran presence that Covington brings. I think that they will carry six this year. I think Brandon Staley learned from that down the stretch of how important that depth was. I think that Braden Fehoko would be the best bet there. But, you know, if they do want kind of a more pass rusher type, maybe they keep Gaziano this year or Andrew Brown instead. But I think they will keep six this year, which is really the way that it has to be.
Yeah, I think they do keep Braden, you know, who, again, kind of like Kelly Rountree, Fehoko was the guy active over Gaziano. Granted, they didn't have Ogbonia, but I still think that Fehoko is going to make it. I think they keep six. I think it'd be a mistake to only keep five.
I'd like to keep six too, but I think this is one of those positions where if they keep three instead of four running backs, then you can keep an extra DT. If you keep two quarterbacks instead of three, you can keep an extra DT, right? So it's kind of making sacrifices at other positions to see more depth at this one. And I think that makes more sense. I just wonder if they view Fehoko as a little bit redundant at this point with everything else that they've kind of done in the offseason. But I'd love to keep, you know, see them keep six and obviously keep Fehoko as well. You probably then have Gaziano as probably your lead practice squad guy. At this point, like he's been previous seasons as well. Forrest Merrill, I mean, obviously got into some games last year, but I don't think they, you know, based on what they've done in the draft and getting bigger DTs and some nose tackles and what they've done the whole offseason, I don't think he's really in their plans, but I do think it's possible that that last practice squad or last roster spot probably comes down to Fehoko or Gaziano.
Yeah, I think so. I went and watched a bunch of Otito's film against, you know, LSU and Hawaii and Utah and ASU. I think from his personal development standpoint, I think you don't want to play him a ton at nose right away. I think you would rather have him put in situations where he's not having to deal with double teams. And I actually really liked what I saw from him as a pass rusher, man. I really did.
I think he's better at that than in run stuff.
I think he's definitely a better pass rusher than a run defender at this point. And I think you can put him as a three tech right away. I don't think he has like the versatility to go out to the five tech against tackles, but use him as a situational pass rusher right away, get him some occasional run defense snaps. And so I think him and Fehoko are different enough where you can survive there. And I just think that Fehoko's ability to stop the run is far greater than anything else that they have on the roster with Covington, Gaziano, Merrill, and Andrew Brown. So I think Tito is different enough, at least this year, where I'm okay keeping, you know, Covington, Fehoko, and Ogbonia, who are kind of very similar body types, but I think provide different skill sets. And so that's kind of where I'm at with Tito. I'm not like get him in there on first down, like let him learn time to stop the run. I'd rather see him as a pass rusher right away and then kind of develop that ability to anchor down and play run defense properly, you know, down the road.
Yeah, you literally stole what I was thinking. Them being, you know, they could be penciled in as two nose tackles, but they're very different. And I think, like you said, Bonilla could be that three tech. I like him, his explosiveness off the line. He's quick. He's got a rip. Much better pass rusher than Fehoko. Conversely, Fehoko can anchor down way better than Ogbonia at this point. And I do think that does make them independent enough where you do keep six.
I do wonder if they, for a backup, particularly like a five tech DT, if they want someone who has like a similar body type to Jerry Tillery, like in the event that something does happen there, that could be kind of a way Gaziano makes the roster. But yeah, other than that, I think that you kind of, these are the five or six guys.
Yeah, either way, I think the last spot is Gaziano or Fehoko, and I do think they ultimately keep six. All right, let's move to the linebacker room, which is very interesting at this point. You know, I have Mike and Will penciled in there. That means, you know, strong side linebacker, which is the Mike, weak side linebacker, which is the Will. So I think we can safely pencil in Drew Tranquil as a starting Will, and then we'll kind of have to see what happens with Kenneth Murray's health at this point. So if he's healthy, I expect him to get that first round starting nod. If not, then you can kind of get into a Troy Reader, Eamon Ogbonlamiga debate. I still think they carry five. I think that Eamon is kind of that fifth player. But we'll, again, a lot of this hinges on Kenneth Murray's health. If he's out, you know, an extended amount of time, then maybe we get into Cole Christiansen or Damon Lloyd kind of territory in terms of being that fifth linebacker. Again, maybe Kyle Van Noy kind of takes more snaps back there. But really, right now, I think we can safely pencil in Murray, Tranquil, Neiman, Reeder, and Ogbonlamiga as five linebackers to make the roster.
Yeah, I think that makes sense in keeping those five guys in particular. The Van Noy signing is interesting. Just, I don't think they'll keep one fewer because of it, because of Murray's injuries, but it might change the kind of linebacker that you keep if you want to just keep Kyle Van Noy as, like, effectively your linebacker five. Like, obviously he'll primarily be an edge rusher, but you might want to kind of, like, just keep him back there in case something happens. So that might affect, like, you know, that might affect the kind of linebacker you go for between, say, Ogbonlamiga and Christiansen. We've heard that they're really high on Eamon Ogbonlamiga. But then after we heard that, they've signed Troy Reeder and Kyle Van Noy. So I'm not totally sure what to think of that yet. But we'll see how that kind of plays itself out. I definitely think Reeder is a lock to make the roster, which is a little bit concerning with some of his pass rush struggles. If he does end up having to play some significant time because of a Kenneth Murray injury, or, you know, if Drew Tranquil were to miss time for some reason. But I think those are most likely our five guys.
Yeah, that last, so, I mean, Murray, Tranquil, Neiman, I feel like there are the locks, which is interesting because Ogbonlamiga played more than Neiman, but you're not cutting Neiman. That'd be ridiculous. Right.
Yeah, he's their best special teams player last year.
Like, yeah, so no chance. Even though he might not be as involved with the linebacker core, he's, you know, arguably more valuable than Reeder, Ogbonlamiga overall. Yeah, it'll kind of depend on what Reeder's role is projected to be, because in 2021, granted, that's not with Staley. He was penciled in more as a will linebacker. And then with Staley, although it was like two-thirds of a season, he was kind of a mix of the two. To me, I think Eamon ends up being the guy they would go with over Reeder, to be completely honest. I do think he's the Mike after Kenneth Murray goes down, and Reeder was just kind of signed to be insurance for Kenneth Murray or even Drew Tranquil, or, you know, even Eamon, whoever, but Murray and Tranquil in particular. I think Reeder can just slot in anywhere, but I actually do think Eamon is the primary backup to Kenneth Murray and not Troy Reeder.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. Yeah, I think to Alex's point about Kyle Van Noy, I think if Kenneth Murray starts the season on, like, injured reserve, for example, I think Van Noy's flexibility could kind of keep them from, you know, talking themselves into keeping Cole Christiansen or Damon Lloyd on the roster and just rolling with the four until Murray is healthy. But, yeah, so I think they'll keep those five. All right, we'll move on to the cornerbacks. Obviously, J.C. Jackson, Asante Samuel Jr., Michael Davis, and Bryce Callahan are locks to make the roster. Brandon Staley said on Saturday that they hold Keamon Hall in very high regard, but he's also a slot only kind of corner. Right. And then they signed Bryce Callahan. So I think that Keamon Hall kind of penciled in as a backup right now, but they also drafted Jasir Taylor and Dean Leonard, Brandon Sebastian as an undrafted free agent. So Keamon Hall kind of iffy right there as a backup, but I do think Tavon Campbell probably making it. And then if they're keeping six, right, so you have two spots between Campbell, Jasir Taylor, and then Keamon Hall, Dean Leonard, maybe on the outside looking in. I don't know how you guys kind of interpreted that situation, but that to me, I think you can put Jasir as a lock to make it as well.
I agree.
I sort of sell the Keamon Hall stock. I'm not sure. I mean, I know Brandon Staley said they're high on him, but, like, his primary role was kind of special teams last year, and, like, he wasn't particularly good at it, and you just drafted two corners who are going to be on special teams for large portions of this year. So that kind of confuses me if you're then saying they're high on Keamon Hall. I would guess that Tavon Campbell's probably more likely to make it. And then, you know, I mean, considering that Jasir Taylor and Dean Leonard were, what, the two six-round picks, right? Or
Taylor was six, Leonard seven.
Leonard seventh. So, I mean, at this point, I would guess that they're kind of keeping one of them, because I think if you want to keep Tavon Campbell or Keamon Hall, then that probably doesn't leave room for both. So maybe they just kind of took both and then said, okay, well, whichever one is the best in the preseason, best in training camp, then we'll kind of go with that one. And I would probably lean towards Jasir Taylor there, just based on, you know, what his film has been. But yeah, it really, those four, I would say Tavon Campbell's probably a lock still. And then I would say between Keemon Hall, Jasir Taylor, and Dean Leonard, you're kind of picking whoever shows you the best special teams corner ability out of that group.
Yeah, so obviously the 3-4 locks here. I do think Jasir Taylor is going to be a lock, as much as a lock could be for a sixth round pick, I guess.
Right.
But I do think him, he's going to be a slot corner for them. I think his role based on college film does translate very well, both to him being a backup returner, which I know we have on the special teams page, to being a blitzer, to being your slot corner, all that sort of stuff. I think Jasir Taylor is the lock to make it. So because he makes it, and because you do have three potential slot corners here, I don't think Keemon Hall makes it. So I think Keemon Hall is out. To me, it comes down to Tavon Campbell or Dean Leonard. Tavon Campbell right now, I know it was disgusting last year at times, and for most of like the times he actually had to start, but I do think they will value him as a veteran rotational sort of piece at this sure. point, who does, like, there's a lot of new guys in here who haven't played. Now, did Tavon Campbell play really well in the system that he's familiar with? Maybe not to end the year, but I think they're going to prioritize that over Dean Leonard. It sucks to have, you know, for Dean Leonard to maybe be a practice squad guy, but this guy is really, really raw. Like, he had one true starting college football year last year. The year before that, he had like 100 coverage snaps or whatever. And it's going to take a long time to get him up to speed. Maybe he shows out in training camp. Maybe he is really good in the preseason and he makes it over Campbell. Wouldn't surprise me. But Dean Leonard has a long way to go, and it's going to be, you know, seventh round pick. All expectations, no problem. He doesn't have to be good this year. But I think they know they're going to have to take 1 year, 2 years, 3 years to really get him to where they want him. I think Tavon Campbell, while he's not the greatest option, he's certainly not a young option, you at least kind of know what you're getting with him. And he does bring something to the team. I think, you know, a lot of these guys, when you put starters in front of these guys, the backups now become more value. Like, Michael Davis is not really going to be the starter as much anymore, but I think he's going to be better this year because he doesn't have to be that guy. And I hope Tavon Campbell, as the guy who, you know, had to cover Justin Jefferson, like, he won't, hopefully he won't so have bad. To do, and it was awful, but hopefully he won't have to do that this year. And so that kind of makes him more valuable, because at the beginning of the year, they're using him as a blitzer. He's forcing two fumbles against the Chiefs. Like, there's a role for him on the team. Dean Leonard, it's going to take a while. And I think Dean Leonard, you know, I'm rooting for him, but I think he's the one outside looking in. So I think Hall's out. I think Leonard versus Campbell is the really only competition. And I do think Campbell ends up taking it.
Yeah, you know, I think Campbell as your fifth corner is completely fine. And I think if you have Campbell, Callahan, and Taylor, I think that gives you a nice balance of size, of slot, of tackling, of coverage. And so I think that's kind of the way it ends up being as well. So I liked what I saw from Taylor. I haven't studied Dean Leonard yet, but I think Taylor gives you some, you know, slot flexibility. I think he gives you that tackling that they really like. And then I think you can kind of, you know, work on the rest. And he's probably like their Ryan Smith this year, right? Where he's like their primary gunner, his primary special teams kind of player. So I think we'll see Taylor be that sixth cornerback. And then you have Campbell, Callahan as their, you know, four and five. So again, Callahan kind of exclusively like a slot guy, although he did have a really nice interception on Mike Williams as an outside corner in 2020. So I think he has some outside flexibility, but yeah, mostly a slot guy. All right, let's talk about the safeties here. We'll kind of wrap it up, and then we'll do special teams on another episode. So obviously Derwin, Nas, JT Woods are safe. I think that they'll keep four this year. And I think that means Alohi Gilman is kind of on the outside looking in. When talking about the safety position, Brandon Staley didn't even mention Alohi Gilman this year. So I think he's kind of getting the KJ Hill treatment that way, at least in terms of, you know, every time Brandon Staley was talking about the receivers last year, he never mentioned KJ Hill. So we knew he kind of like was, at least as a receiver, you know, on the outside looking in. And then, you know, the returner stuff was dumb. But anyways, so anytime he's talked about the safeties after the draft, it's always been the four here and Alohi Gilman kind of on the outside looking in. And I think that makes sense, right? Because, again, just getting different body types, different profiles with Derwin, Nas, Mark Webb, JT Woods. And again, although he was, you know, an Anthony Lynn draft pick, not a Brandon Staley draft pick. So I think they keep four, maybe stash Alohi on the practice squad if they can do that. But I think these are the four safeties for sure.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say there's a little bit of a Roundtree Kelly dynamic here where it's just like, well, I mean, Mark Webb was the guy they took last year. And then Alohi Gilman, like Steven said, was kind of an Anthony Lynn draft pick. Like sort of admittedly a bit of a reach at the time. And now they've taken JT Woods, Nasir Adderley, obviously kind of playing in his last year, probably here. I just don't see a way that Alohi Gilman makes a team. Could be like the perfect practice squad player if they wanted to go in that direction. But they kept four last year, right? They didn't keep five.
Yeah, they kept four, yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine it's the same thing again. And I would probably favor Mark Webb over Alohi Gilman as well.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah, I agree. I know people are like, oh, well, Alohi Gilman was safety three last year, but it was kind of by default. Webb was hurt, and they had no other choice, really. So I think Alohi's on the outside looking in. Mark Webb was phenomenal in training camp before he got injured. So I do think if that continues, then I think Webb is going to be pretty awesome for the team. Yeah, four safeties works for me. So we got 25 on defense and then 24 on offense. Is that what we ended up with? Yeah, 25 and 24.
49. So yeah. We have a kicker punter, and
holder or long snapper.
Long snapper. Okay, so we're 52, and then
me. One other spot up for grabs.
One other spot up for grabs.
I mean that's great though. Like we worked it out where there's wiggle room for one more spot.
And so maybe that's a fifth edge rusher. Maybe that's a sixth receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth tight end, if one of those guys, you know, kind of earns a spot.
Fourth running back.
Yeah, that's
yep, 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 yep.
About right.
That's what.
yeah, just kind of getting back to Mark Webb for a second. He's kind of my favorite second year player that I'm looking forward to watching this year outside of Slater and Samuel Jr. Just because of everything he was doing in training camp, and man, was getting an interception like every day. It felt like at practices, and I think he just gives them some really nice flexibility as somebody who can cover the slot, play in the box, and I'm really excited to see where he goes this year. And I think his health last year was really the only reason why he wasn't obviously making an impact. So man, I feel really good about this defensive depth, man. I really like the way that Brandon Staley has turned this over, and Tom Telesco, of course.
Yeah, no, this is a lot better. I know the Chargers lost some guys really early, but like, you know, Harris, Marshall, like I feel so much like it seems like each position has a backup that's either a legit free agent they brought in or a draft pick. It seems like at each spot, offense or defense, there's someone that they've invested something legitimate in. And it just feels good to know, like, come on, like Sailor, Clapp, Hymus, like that's your how off. Like, when was the last time we had an interior that was this good? You know, we're talking about two of these guys potentially starting for the team. Yeah. In a pinch or whatever, and feeling good about it. It's great to see this team do have this kind of depth, I think.
I mean, yeah, we're talking about an interior and probably backup tackles that are better than our 2020 offensive line. So, I mean, that's a great scenario situation to be in. I do think running back, and if you're talking about offense and maybe cornerback a little bit on defense, are the two areas where we have like the most flexibility or most uncertainty, I would kind of say, in terms of making these roster predictions. But you know, I'm curious to see how it plays out in the preseason. I think that's going to be the big determiner for some of these debates we've had down the depth chart, so it's gonna be fun to watch.
Yeah, somebody said that Mark Webb isn't fast enough because he was getting cooked by Travis Kelce. It's Travis Kelce.
Travis Kelce cooks everyone.
What are we doing here? Come on, man. Michael Davis was getting cooked by Travis Kelce too. Like, come on. And Michael Davis runs a 4.3. Oh my gosh. All right. So now I'm really excited about this roster, man. I think this is probably the deepest roster that we've had for the Chargers since, like, I was in middle school, since LT was on the roster. Like, I really feel that way. So I'm so excited to watch this. There's so many good training camp battles I think we can look forward to, and all this depth is just going to be so important this year, especially as the AFC is kind of loading up on it. So it looks like we got one last super chat question here. Matt Mitri, I don't know, let me know how you say that. Does signing Van Noy and Callahan change anyone's opinion on the draft? And then he specifically mentions Spiller in the fourth.
I feel a lot better about it because, again, at the time we didn't know, and now we know. So there was a strategic plan, I think, and that's great. I think it does change my opinion more favorably, but the last thing they need to do is get a right tackle because, again, they didn't just need an edge rusher. They didn't just need a corner in the fourth round, in the third round. They also needed a tackle at some point. They don't have that. So while I do view it more favorably, they do need to get a tackle for me to be like, okay, now I see the whole plan.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely made my opinion on Spiller in the fourth better than where it was when it happened, where I angrily left my house and vowed to never come back.
Wow.
So I was pretty strong mad.
Did he date your sister?
I don't know. I'm an only child, but no.
Did he date you?
No, maybe. I don't know. But no, it makes my feeling more positive on the draft.
Sure.
For sure. Like Tyler said, they do still need to get a right tackle. I do think there is something still to be said about, you know, you could have still gotten like a 4-year contract of a guy that's like cheaper if you took that in the fourth round and then took a running back in the, you know, fifth. So there's, you know, draft pick value there, like Arjun has talked about, of getting like cheap contracts at premium positions. But no, I think it's definitely made the Spiller pick a lot more understandable.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Van Noy signing for me has more like draft ramifications than the Callahan signing does, because I feel like, you know, you're not getting better than Kyle Van Noy in the draft. You're just not. You know, even if you're taking like a Myjai Sanders or D'Angelo Malone in the third round, the players who were on the board, like, they're not going to be better than Kyle Van Noy this year. So I think Van Noy definitely changes things more than Callahan does. I do think with Callahan's injury risk and age, you could have found, you know, a similar kind of player in the draft. So, I felt positive about the draft before this. You know, really the edge rusher concern was really the only reason I was kind of like knocking it. And now you have Kyle Van Noy. So, really anxious to see how the cornerback room pans out. Obviously, if Bryce Callahan can stay healthy, then he's a perfect fourth corner for your team. So, yeah, I don't think it necessarily like changes a ton, but yeah, I feel much more at peace and comfortable with where the Chargers are at. Outside of right tackle, I think they don't really have a roster hole. Like, I don't really see one.
Yeah.
There's some roster holes, but I mean, not.
Maybe linebacker, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe.
Right.
All right, so I don't know. We'll see. There's gonna be some film breakdowns coming from a bunch of us as well. So I'm gonna dive into Tito's film and potentially do that later today. And we'll talk about special teams, as somebody's asking me about punter on a later date, because some of us have to leave. But yeah, so thank you guys so much for tuning in on a Saturday. We appreciate you jumping up early with us and you know, watching the show. As always, if you're listening to this, leave us a rating or a view, and we always really appreciate that. And we'll talk to you guys later, and we'll, I don't know, we'll probably do Wednesday, I guess. We'll figure it out. Anyways, talk to you guys later. Yeah.